Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode number 159 of the Apologue Podcast. I am your host, Simon Head. It's good to see you. It's good to be here. And it's good that you are here, too. This episode is brought to you in part by Bose All Natural. Check out their Lug Tread Lager. It's crisp, balanced, and refreshing. It's a lagered ale. It's a term they coined. It's fermented like an ale and cold aged like a lager. It's been Bose's flagship brand since they opened in 2006, and as of 2017, it's now available in 355 milliliter cans for the first time, and it's won over more than 20 awards for tasting awesome. Ba-ba. Also, I've been really, really into their Nordic Pale Ale. It's a Kissemeyer. It's called Kissemeyer Nordic Pale Ale. It's delicious. Tom Green Cherry Milk Stout. Makes your lips a little sticky, but it's good. Wag the Wolf, which is part of their Wild Oats series, and their full-time IPA, which is their newest full-time brand, which is how it got the name. Bah, 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 bah. It's this medium-bodied ale finished dry, lingering hop and fruit notes. That's their IPA. So check out Bose anywhere beer is sold nationwide in Canada. Americans, I'm sorry, but you're going to have to go to Bose.ca and see if they can, you know, do like the Al Capone days and get it across the border somehow. I don't know how they're going to do it, but go there. Anyways, Bose.ca for more info on all the great beers they put out. They put out about 50 brands per year. 50 brands. Or 50, I guess, 50 types of beer. I don't know. I could only drink one or two of them because that's all I'm capable of doing. Amazon shoppers, do you like shopping on Amazon? Of course you do. Do you like supporting this show? Eh, a little. So go to apologue.ca/Amazon if you're from Canada, or apologue.ca/US Amazon if you're from the United States of America. And when you go there, you can bookmark that URL. And every time you go to Amazon or go to that link, you're going to Amazon, you'll be supporting the show. Costs you no extra money, and you've done all the work you can do to help out this show. If you want to do it the old-fashioned way, go to apologue.ca and click on those banners on the right-hand side, locate your country, and bookmark the link. Awesome. Support the show, and like I said, costs you no extra money. If you want to support the show on a monthly basis, go to patreon.com/apologue and become a patron. Pledge as much or as little as you want on a monthly basis, which really helps me out with hosting and gas fees. You can cancel at any time. If you want to go buy a t-shirt or buy some music, go to apologue.ca/shop. And if you're on iTunes, which everybody is, unless you're one of them Apple haters, go to iTunes. And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the show, and give it 5 stars, please. Like the show on Facebook by going to facebook.com/apologuepod. And follow me on Twitter, @SimonHead666. Today on the show, I have Zach Gehring. Zach Gehring is the founder of a band called Demons. Not The Demons. Don't call them The Demons. They're called Demons. Because the bands are a thing of the early 2000s and nobody likes that anymore. The is out. Demons, everybody. He's also plays in a band, a very popular band called May. But we're not here to talk about May. We're here to talk about Demons. And their new album is called Embrace Wolf. Here is a song. It is called Always Your Own. That's the new Demons album, Embrace Wolf. And here he is, everybody. Let's check it out. This is Zach Gehring. We had this conversation last week, and turns out we had a good conversation, and it was a very fun time. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the show. Here comes Mr. Zach Gehring on the Apolog Podcast.
I'm in a band also, aside from Demons, called May. And May is, we're all located across the states. So Dave, the singer, is in Nashville here, and Jacob's in, well, Nashville now. So we're here to record some songs and start work on a record. So that's why I'm here in Nashville. But I'm here for a week, and then I go back to Virginia where I work and have my family and whatnot.
It's so neat now these days where you can be in a band that are in different towns. I mean, that's the thing. When I was young, that was sort of like unheard of, you know, you just couldn't do it that way.
Yeah. I mean, with May, it's like this weird thing where, you know, we had some success prior. So we have just, you know, we're going to put a record out and in the next year or so, and it's going to be funded by a label. So we're just kind of traveling, and it's all funded. And we also have, obviously, I mean, kind of to your point, the technological kind of capabilities now to communicate in ways that weren't available, you know, back in the day, even when I started doing music on the road, going on the road, and so to speak. So, yeah, I mean, it's weird, you know. I don't love, obviously, you know, I have the family back home. I don't like leaving, but it's just one of these things I do. I guess I've been doing it since I was like 2000. Well, I've been playing music since I was 19, you know, I was in high school. So it's just this thing that I do.
Yeah, it's, I mean, when, even now it's more expensive to travel though, unfortunately. Like if you buy a tank of gas, it's four times the amount of, it cost in like the late 90s, but people still manage to have their satellite bands. Like I know guys that just are in fun bands and they're all in different towns, you know, all across the place, and they're all about it, you know, because it's, you know, it's fun. It's interesting when bands become more successful, how much they don't want to be in the same town with each other. Coincidence?
Yeah. It's a good topic. Good topic of discussion, actually.
Yeah. So I got your Demons record.
Okay.
And I was like, fuck, this is awesome. It is really good.
Thank you so much.
Man, it was like, it reminded me of, you know, Steve Albini days, where Steve Albini used to record like Big Black stuff, and, you know, even Melvins and before that and all that. It's just, it's got it all, man. And no, go ahead.
No, I'm glad you like it. I mean, that's the thing. It's weird to, you know, I have stuff I like, and the band has stuff that they like. But when it comes to the product itself, so to speak, the songs, you never know how it's going to kind of come off, or, you know, bands like cite influences or what have you. And I mean, Steve Albini, like the Shellac, the Big Black stuff, and the Melvins, you know, Mudhoney kind of thing. It's stuff that we all love. It's just one of those things where I don't know how that translates into what we actually write. I know it comes through at moments, but, you know, so I'm glad you mentioned those kind of things that it calls to your mind. It's great because I love those bands, and that's the spirit. I mean, you know, abstractly speaking, you know, you kind of want to kind of capture something that you perceive in those bands. Even now, you know, I mean, back in the day, but now, I mean, I was put on a Shellac record, you know, I'll put on like, I have a couple of the records, and I'm just like, this is really cool. I want to do this kind of thing. And, I just really want to kind of get into that unbridled kind of spirit where you don't have expectations of of anything other than the fact they just want to make a really cool record.
Yeah. So, I like music when I can, when I, cause I have a pretty high bullshit meter. You know what I mean? Like it's pretty good, but when I feel it and I feel it, it feels like something that's coming straight. And, you know, every song's longish. There's no, you know, there's a lot of, I like the fact that you always turn in that room mic on and off, like, you know, yeah. However part of the song is. And it really does entertain, you know, how, you know, a song is written, you know, and you still have a bridge. There's still a bridge too. So there's still structure. It's not like wacky out there music, you know?
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, I'm not an engineer by any stretch of the imagination, so I'm all about room mics.
Yeah. Did you record it yourself?
No, the band did. We recorded ourselves. Our bass player, John, he is an engineer. And so what we did was we went to this just house in Virginia. We rented a place like through Airbnb or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we didn't really know what the place looked like. We just asked the guy who owned it. It's like, this is what we're going to be doing. We want to make sure it's isolated enough so we're going to make noise, blah, blah, blah. But we got there and it was a really actually unique house in a good way. I mean, there, you know, like there was a vaulted ceiling. There weren't too many like hard, you know, right angles or 90 degree angles. There weren't even really any square rooms. And so we just set the drums up and we, you know, we had the amps down there, but there's like this big ceiling. We put mics all over the place. And, you know, when I started the band initially, you know, I definitely had a specific vision sonically of what I wanted. And, you know, based on how long we've been a band and based on how long I've actually been in this position to kind of, you know, have a heavy say in what was going on, I'm really proud of what happened. We recorded the whole record over a span of a few days, maybe 3 or 4 days at this house. And then we did vocals back in Virginia Beach where we're all located. So yeah, there was like this kind of, you know, a confidence that we had just because, you know, we had an engineer there that knew exactly what we wanted. And he was involved in the first EP we did as well. And so he knew what was going on. He was familiar. And, you know, he was just really, he listened and he knew how to get what we wanted. And I think it came out pretty well.
Yeah, absolutely. A couple of days, huh? Just,
yeah. Well, you know, yeah, it's funny. We had 9 songs. We had 8 going in and we did one more while we were at the house there in Virginia. And it was 4 days. And, you know, over the years, you know, I've been playing in bands since 1999, 1998. And I've been blessed with playing with good drummers every time and the various bands that I've been in and still playing today. And I think that's the key to getting, being productive in the studio is directly related to how good the drummer is.
Absolutely.
You know? And yeah. So our drummer Drew, he just kind of, you know, he's been playing for years. He's really, really good. And, you know, he just kind of knocked it out in like a day. He did like 9 tracks in like a day and a half or so. And then from there, we just had guitars and demons are pretty easy. It's just a lot of noise and, you know, you hit the chords that are there. Yeah. So, you know, I don't pride myself on too many things, but if I do pride myself on something, it's the fact that I was able to get these 3 other guys involved in what I wanted to do. I mean, everyone brings a very substantial advantage to what's going on and we work really well together. So, you know, we had a great time in the studio. It wasn't stressed at all. It was just kind of like, let's have a good time. And we drank a lot and we drank a lot of coffee and we just, you know, stayed up late and made this record. And yeah, it came out pretty good.
Yeah. You know, I can sense it, you know, and I'm a recording engineer too, by trade. And I've been in sessions that have had the worst drummers and it never turns out good. And you're totally right. Like the better the drummer, the easier it is. They're laying the foundation. Everybody has to play off that. And did you guys do much click work or is it just playing?
Yeah, there's definitely clicks. I mean, that's another thing. Like he likes the click. He's not one of these guys that tries to kind of like, I don't know. I mean, that's the thing. Like I said, like the drummers I've worked with, they've all been uncomfortable. They've all been comfortable with the click track. And I think that's really important as well. For me, I mean, when, you know, I've been in two bands substantially in my life and the other band May. I was introduced to the click track live, you know, when we had tracks and we had in-ears and stuff like that, and we could play live to click. And it's this thing that's jolting in one sense, because it kind of emphasizes how off you are so many times. But once you get comfortable and once you kind of get into the groove, it's like something you want. It becomes something you really almost need, you know, to kind of feel comfortable playing music. And luckily with Drew, I mean, he's like this guy that counts, you know, he's the drummer in that sense where he's just not a field. He's both feel and math.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really important for me, because, you know, you need someone that's just like the essence of a good drummer, in my opinion, is someone that's just like, you don't have to think about, you can rely upon. As far as like the fills and like the kind of like degrees of Neil Peart, you know, like that's fine. You know, it's great when this drummer can do this one thing, but as long as they can kind of be this guy that, or be this person, you can kind of come back with and just say, okay, well, like I know he or she is going to be there.
Yeah.
With the tempo, and that's what I need.
Yeah.
You know, come in on the one, or come when we're supposed to come in. Yeah. And that's what I want. And that's what, you know, for sure that Drew provides, but he also provides a creative flair and technique and talent to kind of go beyond that.
Yeah. A couple of thoughts on Click Live. My favorite one, because we did it where just the drummer played with the click and we didn't hear what he was doing, but you'd be playing the song and you sound like, this feels slow. And you look back and he's like, nope, click's on. You know what I mean? Like there's no arguments in the van after going, you played that song too fast. You played that song too slow. He's like, don't, dude, I did exactly what I was supposed to do. And does alleviate a lot of issues.
It's great because you have that kind of confidence where it's like a diffuser, right? So it's like, okay, well, we were on the click, so I can't blame anyone if I felt a little off, you know. And if you want to speed it up, you know, you speed the click up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And you just have this kind of like steady rock there, and it becomes this thing where you rely upon. And, you know, we had the cues in our ears. They're just like, oh, 1, 2, 3, 4, go kind of thing, you know. And it was great. And I think it's really important as, you know, I don't want to be preacher or teacher. Yeah, like teacher, I don't know what's going on, but it's really important for bands to get comfortable with this kind of grid, you know, because it's so easy to get kind of romantic about feeling. And when you're playing music, you know, oh, let's just see where it goes and whatever. But that takes that takes talent to kind of be able to kind of do that in a way that's productive,
yeah, you know? Especially when you're trying to put overdubs on it and the drummer's been pushing the sound the beat all over the place. Well, you don't really know where the one is anymore until you keep work at it. At least if it's on, you know, on a click, then at least you know that it's not going to do something wacky, you know. When it's supposed to start on the one, that's when the song starts, you know. There's no like extra beat in there somewhere. Somebody sent me a drum take to edit and say, can you put this and grid this? And I went, okay. It was the worst drum takes I've ever heard. And I had to somehow make it fit and send it back to the guy. I'm like, it sounds like a robot playing, but it's on the grid.
That's what I had to do. It's like you should send it a little more. But,
yeah. Okay. We call it lies. My friends and I, we call it lies. How many lies are you going to put into this? A bunch of lies. Yeah. Well, let's hear a song, because I have over here, I have another computer with some songs on it.
Yes, the song itself is 17:9.
we're back.
That was awesome.
Song's over. We were talking about the Descendants and what you're in the song. Yeah, definitely Descendants are, they all, that's a band that lives in all different parts of America too. And they all sort of get together and play. I mean, they're the type of band that they don't, I mean, they're just so good. I mean, it's one of those things where if you're good at what you do, you don't really need to practice what you do. You just need to, you know what I mean? Just get together and play music.
Come together and just write the songs, and they're just what they are, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, the band is so like unassuming in a weird way. Like you see them and they're just kind of up there, and Bill Stevenson's drumming is so meticulous and so just on.
Yeah.
But the way he played, you just look at him, it's like, man, what's that guy even doing? But he's just like on, you know, like it's so good. And I was just like, so, cause I haven't seen Descendants outside or all outside of like the Warped Tour. And I loved Warped Tour when I was a kid, but I'd stand on festival shows. Like you don't really see a band when you see a festival show.
Yeah.
Like I want to see them at a venue. Mm-hmm. I never saw all at a venue, but I've seen Descendants now at a venue, and I was just like super pumped and it sounded so good.
I loved it. They definitely, they pull it together. When I did this one, a couple of Descendant shows up in Canada here, Milo's voice started off, first three songs is like rough, like, holy shit, is he going to make it? And then after the fourth song, his voice got better, which to me was like, that's so out of this world. Like he warmed up. It was insane. Yes. I couldn't believe it. I have a board tape of it, and I'm just listening to it go like, why is his voice better now? Like towards the end, usually if you're like, wah, you're going to, you know, and they don't really play a lot. And he was still, you know, working a job, you know, like it was a punk rock band or anything, like touring much. They'd play and sometimes he'd lose his voice because they don't practice as much as they used to. Yeah.
It's funny because he had this kind of like, you know, those things, I don't know if you wear them when you're running, like they're just kind of a strap on backpack almost of water. So the camel back on. So he wasn't even drinking bottles of water. He just had this kind of like tube kind of a shirt and you drink water. And like, he looked so tired between songs. He's just kind of like lean on his knees, but then the song would start and it was just like, just kill it. You know, it was so good.
Yeah. I really do aspire to, when I look at musicians, they're definitely a band that you'd look at and put in a higher regard because, you know, they have been in bands. They've had the taste of major record labeldom, and they have then branched out on their own. They have dealt with all sorts of crap personally, and that documentary that it says everything about them.
Yeah,
and they still play, and they play to more people than they did when they were, you know, before. You know, so it's,
they are like they kind of like crossed over into the institution side of punk rock band. You know,
definitely,
and I think Carl Alvarez is like seriously one of the best punk rock bass players. I say of all time. I mean, I'm 36, so I don't know what my all time means, but I think he's a brilliant bass player, and I think it really shows on All's Masked Murder record in particular. He's just that he carries the melody of so many of these songs, and he's just so brilliant.
Yeah, actually, my favorite punk bass player is Derf Scratch from Fear. If you ever listen to
really?
Yeah, he's fucking awesome. That's such a great that Fear for the Record is it's so good. I don't know if you've ever heard it, but it is insanely good. It sounds like an 80s recording, but my God, it's awesome. And they actually feature a little bit of it in that Sound City, that Dave Grohl movie.
Okay.
Because Leaving, they recorded that record at that. And it is and the drummer Spit Sticks, he was awesome.
Man,
punk names.
Fear's on those bands just like the epitome of like 80s punk rock, where it's super dangerous.
Yeah.
But on the cusp, I mean, they played SNL.
Yeah. You heard that story, right? The John Belushi was his favorite band. The John Belushi got him on Saturday Night Live. And like Lorne Michaels, they played like a couple of songs or a couple of beats of the music, and Lorne Michaels running down the hall like, shut it off, shut it off. Yeah.
I just watched on YouTube the other night, and it's just like, man, this is like, this is crazy. These guys are just like off the chain.
Yeah. Off the hook. Yeah, man. Wow. Let's talk about your band.
Let's do it. Yeah. Right. I mean, you call it forever about punk rock.
I know. So this, I don't want to say this isn't a side project. It's a coming together of musicians that with a like-minded intention of making a record as a band. I mean, I kind of read what you were saying here in your bio, and it does mean that, I agree, you know, a point on that, my thoughts on that is that as you get a little older, you understand what it's like to be in a band, and starting with different people in another band gives you not just perspective of the band you're in, but it you can relearn or how to be in a band again. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's funny. So, you know, the band, I joined May in 2003, I believe. And that was the band that kind of like became full-time for me. We had some, you know, we were this band that was just like on, you know, that we didn't have jobs. It was this thing. And then in 2010 or so, we slowed down. We were kind of like a little exhausted. So, you know, I was in Regina at the time. And then it was at that point where I started just kind of like, okay, well, I still want to do music, and I want to do something a little bit harder, something that's just not really appropriate for May. So I was like, well, let me just do this, you know, start trying to record some songs. And that's probably like this thing started. And so as it grew and as it kind of, and locally within, like, you know, when I say locally, I mean Norfolk, Virginia Beach, like very small area of Virginia. Like, well, we play some shows, blah, blah, blah. And it just became this thing where we were fortunate to have a friend of mine that had a, you know, a Spartan Records out of Seattle that put the records out. And as it became more of a band with some of the guys around town, you know, it kind of allowed me this, first of all, number one, chance to kind of play some harder music, which I feel like is a large part of my identity. And various aspects, but also just kind of, you know, to your point, like take what I've kind of gathered from being in a band for a long time, full time, with a lot of the business aspects and a lot of the, you know, more, you know, difficult aspects of playing music with people. And then kind of keeping that in mind and starting this new band. So it is not, I mean, in one sense, it's a side project based on the fact that, you know, we all have jobs and we all have this kind of other aspects of our lives that kind of demand attention. But it's not a side project in the sense of, you know, our intensity to create this kind of, to create the music we do, you know. And so with the thing I take the most from being, and playing music for a long time and various different kind of contexts is trying our best to kind of maintain just like a social equilibrium where we're all kind of just having a good time. And I think that's the most difficult part of being in a band is kind of like maintaining a good natured kind of experience when you come to hanging out with each other and playing music together, because ambition is really poisonous. I think ambition is as necessary as it is poisonous. And so when you get people that become really ambitious, you start to see these other sides of people. And so how do you kind of balance ambition and kind of fun, you know, like within this kind of like unit? And so far, you know, and I think a lot of it comes to the down to the fact that we're all kind of busy in other aspects of our lives. So when Demons gets together and we rehearse and we play shows, it's just kind of, it's cathartic. You know, it's not to say, not in the grandiose sense, it's just kind of this thing where we kind of come together and have a good time. It's therapeutic, I guess is a better word. Yeah. But for me also, there is an ambition there. I do want the band to kind of, you know, I can't tour with Demons, you know, realistically, I can't do a lot of things, but I do want them, the band itself, to get attention. I'm really proud of what's going on in the band right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You kind of hit it on the head with the ambition is poison. That's actually, there's a song right there. and that's what kills bands. You know, that's what kills bands that get a little success. They can't handle it. You know, their whole life, They've been traveling around making no money. And all of a sudden people are at the shows and people are getting into your band and things, or people that you wouldn't necessarily think would be into your band or into your band. And that's tough enough to deal with to begin with.
Yeah.
But then you have to go and play music, you know, that you obviously took a long time to write and record, and you're trying to further yourself as in your career, 'cause you want this to be your life And that's one thing that gets missed out in punk rock, is that you got to pay the bills. You have to.
Yeah.
If you don't pay the bills, then you can't be in a band anymore, unless you want to go work what's considered a real job or whatever.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I mean, I think, and so honestly, one of the things with Demons is like, okay, well, you know, I get ahead of myself because I want to play. I want to go on a week-long tour. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know if I can really even logistically do that, you know, but you kind of get this mindset. And I think it's a mindset, and I hate to talk about, you know, quote unquote, the artist identity or anything that's kind of grandiose or abstract or poetic. But when you're into something you like, you want to do it, you know, when you want to explore the possibilities. And Demons is both, like, for me, like, Demons is like this kind of collision of insecurity and just like excitement, because I'm insecure when it comes to this role that I'm playing in Demons versus the roles I've played in the past when it comes to music. But at the same time, like, with the guys I'm playing with and with the songs, I mean, you know, we're really stoked on what's going on. So, you know, what do you do when you have this kind of excitement and ambition, but at the same time, this like logistical constraint? You know, if I had not been doing music for so long, like, I, you know, and if I hadn't, my life had not been kind of informed around music in the way it is, you know, I wouldn't have the ability or the convenience or the advantage to do Demons, just because that, like, what I've done in the past has kind of allowed me to do Demons and thus motivated me and inspired me to do Demons.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's that's this thing where you just really have to kind of be conscious about bracketing how this thing is supposed to work and trying to really kind of keep in control of it before it kind of just like makes you a little petty and makes you a little annoying to other people.
The insecurity is what fuels this, because to me, you know, when you say something like that, I think the insecurity is everything about what you want this to be. You know, you're out of your comfort zone, hence you're insecure, you know? Yeah. So that's good. That's healthy, because that means you're pushing yourself musically, you're pushing yourself, you know, you're putting yourself out there in a different light, and you don't know what the world holds. You know, the universe will either embrace it or not embrace it. And that's...
No, that's like actually a great point in terms of like the insecurities. Like, I'm in a place here in this band where I love it, but it's not because of my role in this unit. It's just because of the fact that I can play this type of music that, I mean, largely, like, I identify as this kid that's like really into punk rock and really into art music. And I love music in general. You know, I can listen to Maroon 5 on a Tuesday afternoon and be just kind of like, oh, this is really, you know, like, this is, I mean, let's explore Maroon 5 right now. But then, like, I go home, and when the, you know, the wife and the kid goes to bed, I put on an Adolescence record, or I put on a Converge record. And so this, like, this sounds like this, like, punk rock kind of thing is like really important to me. I mean, it's what I kind of got into it all for in the first place. And Demons allows me to kind of explore that. But at the same time, you know, you hold what you do in high esteem. You want to do the best you can, and you don't want to be an embarrassment. You know, you want to be, you want people to hear it and be like, oh, this is good and this is cool. So there's like a lot of kind of, what's the right word? Not contradictory, but something like these collisions of things that happened. And with Demons, you know, it's just like this day by day thing where we just write songs. And that's one of the things we motivate ourselves on, is just like writing. We write a lot of songs and kind of get together and just like, you know, explore this kind of thing. So it's right now, it's really great. And I love the role it plays in the larger larger expanse of my life right now.
Yeah. Well, that's good. You know, like when it comes back to perspective too, on what you do with your what's considered your real band, not real band. That's a bad thing. That's a horrible thing to say. I take that back. But you know, the band, it gives you perspective to go into what your career musically is and what pays the bills, or, you know what I mean? Like, and you can take that as a fresh new, oh, this is great. You know, like, this, whatever I thought was sort of it's tough putting a band together from the scratch, from the very beginnings again. A lot of people, like I put a band together 15 years ago, we toured Europe, a lot of people left, and then they all came back to me and said, you know how fucking hard it is putting a band together? I'm like, yes, yeah. I do know how hard that is.
Yeah. Oh man, being in a band is so difficult because people are generally so awful. Like, you know, like you, there's so large of a chance that someone in the band is just going to be a jerk, you know, it's just going to make you not want to hang out. But I've been really fortunate, and I have this one band and I have the other band, and all the people are really great. And to your point earlier, you know, a second ago, where, you know, as much as Demons was created out of this kind of experience that I had with May, now the fact that I have Demons allows me to enter back into this process of May with a, you know, a new kind of like freshness, a new kind of expanse where it's kind of less pressure. Because when you get into this point where you don't feel like you're expressing a certain part of your personality, you start to kind of really hone in on that limitation, and it kind of plagues or kind of obscures how good things are.
Yep.
And so that I have this kind of other outlet. And like you said, it's not a side outlet. You know, it's this just kind of
another thing, another chapter
thing, yeah. You know, that, yeah. I'm really able to kind of put a lot of effort in, a lot of subjectivity into, and it really kind of benefits my approach going into the May thing, because the two, you know, they are very distinct from each other.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't believe in this idea of the essential self. I don't believe in this idea of like the true you. So when it comes to like musical identity, I think it's just like, okay, well, I love music in general, so I can get stoked on, you know, this Paramore song as much as I can just like really dig into this, you know, Minutemen song or whatever it is, you know? And I think that's one of the great things about music is how similar so many aspects of different genres, different bands, different whatever, what have you, are, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're explaining to me though, you just love music and you're willing to find the good in anything of the music. And that to me is a great attitude to take. And I try to carry the same premise. I mean, there's not a lot of times, I don't know, maybe as I get older, there's songs where you go, this fucking sucks. This is hard. That when you, why do you, I just don't like it. You know what I mean? So I work in a theater, in a soft seat theater. We do dance competitions and it's every crappy song under the sun. Well, if I really hated that music so much, I would probably, you know, I wouldn't work there anymore. You have to find the good in anything with music, because music, the bare bones of it is it's art, you know, it's supposed to be. It's a commodity. It's a pastime. It's a career. It's everything to people.
Everything.
You know what I mean? So when for guys like you, it's like, this is, you need to be able to have perspective on what music is, and you need to know the good and the bad. But I think you're explaining that the industry somehow likes to put things in little boxes. And
well, you know, it's, you know, just today I was in the car with my buddy Dave, and we were having these really douchey conversations in terms of music criticism. We were just like, we were talking about, you know, Arcade Fire. I just read an article today, and I'm saying this on the podcast. I don't know. Like, I don't have, this is not to offer my opinion on Arcade Fire. Mm-hmm. I read this article. They're not filling the rooms you're supposed to be filling, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And we started talking about the kind of like the rooted kind of like foundation of pop music that kind of infects a lot of genres, right? So for me, when you think about Paramore versus a Arcade Fire, I mean, to me, like, it's all pop music, but the way these perceptions and images and culture and music cultures work, and like the bands mean very different things to different people. And I'm just like, you know, what is it about myself? You know, I look at myself in terms of like the music I enjoy, because in one sense I identify primarily as this like punk rock kid. But then again, like I can listen to a Silverchair, I can listen to a Fleetwood Mac, I can listen to a Paramore and just like, oh, the Killers, like whatever, what have you. And I'm like, man, this song is really fucking cool. You know, I like this song. And for me, like it's like this kind of like oscillation between purity and just kind of like, I do, you know, you never want to be a normal person, right? Like you never want to be this guy. Oh, I like all types of music. Like who likes that type of person? Says they like all types of music.
Yeah.
But then I hear myself like, oh, I love this Glenn Campbell cover of this Hank Williams song. I love this, you know, Bon Jovi track. I love it. So you find yourself loving all types of music.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, man, I really have to organize this, you know? Yeah. I really have to understand what's going on. But ultimately, just like, you know, you're someone that kind of grows up and you just really dig music, you know, and you can find, you know, you listen to your Bruce Springsteens and you listen to your, you know, the Social Distortions, and then you realize that Mike Ness has sang on stage with Bruce Springsteen before. And so these worlds collide in this kind of, in this wonderful way, yeah, you know, where it's like, oh, well, Bruce Springsteen is super punk rock.
Yeah.
At least enough for Mike Ness to go on stage and sing.
Totally.
You know, bad luck with Bruce Springsteen. You know, it's really rad.
Yeah. No, you're right. And you're explaining that you're getting out of it what you want to get out of it. And if you don't, if someone looks at you and go, why the fuck do you like that song? You're like, well, I like it and you can't stop me from liking it. You know what I mean? Like, and I, you know, when, I have two kids too, and, we're watching like Disney movies and stuff. I'm like, every song is a drop. It's a single. It's like, this is how are they affecting me? Why is this affecting me so much? You know? Yeah. And, you know, and the other thing I've noticed over the years is when I meet bands and I like them as people, I like their music better. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Yeah. That's just a thing. And I got to get over it because it didn't work for Good Charlotte because I hate that band.
Yeah. It's so weird because like you, like the idea of like not liking bands, I ran into this mistake a lot. Like I did a podcast maybe a year and a half ago when my team was first starting this guy. And I was like, man, why do you, when you're in a band or when you're an artist or, and they're like, okay, well, you're slow to critique other bands, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, you're a fan of music, and so you have opinions on music. So you have opinions on bands you like, and you don't bands you don't like. Mm. I was like, why are bands so afraid to like, or why are people, musicians or what have you, like, you know, why is it not okay to not like bands? And so this person's like, well, what bands do you not like?
Oh shit!
You know, like that's a good question right now because I just kind of, you know, entered. I just brought up the point, you know, the topic.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, yeah, so people are, it's just the weird thing. It's like, in one sense, you want to support artists, but at the same time, you know, you care about it because you have opinions on it. And, you know, this band's awful, but they're not a bad band. Like,
yeah.
You know, what is my opinion to matter? Like, people like this band, they don't need my fandom, like whatever. So I'm just a music fan and I don't, you know, I've never understood, you know, Flaming Lips. That's just not a band that I've connected with,
sure,
but people love that band. So if I say I don't like Flaming Lips, that's not a claim. It's just like this expression of me as
Absolutely.
A person. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, people take this thing. It's like, oh, well, who are you to say this? And it's like, well, I'm not anyone to say this, but I'm a music fan.
Yeah.
So I have opinions.
Well,
the
people that say, how dare you, are even worse than, you know what I mean, than the bad bands out there, because they're trying to take another side of an art. They're trying to create an argument rather than everybody's entitled to their opinion. I mean, I grew up in the 90s, you know, I understand that part and I'm okay with it, you know, and I have to tell you my Good Charlotte stories. I used to work for a band and we were opening the band. I was Sum 41 and we were opening for Good Charlotte all down the East Coast. And they were horrible. They were just a horrible band. You're just so bad. I mean, okay, Sum 41 were a bunch of kids from Southern Ontario and punk rock kids. And I took my friend Mark Belke, who used to play guitar in SNFU, as a guitar tech. He's a very old friend of mine. He needed some money. So I said, come do the guitars for Sum 41. And he looked at Derek and those guys and went, that's a real band.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When everybody was looking at them like a bunch of cookie cutter punkers, you know what I mean? Goes, that's a real band. That's a band that I like. And I like, look at him. He's skateboarding. He's doing stuff that kids do, you know?
Yeah.
So for legitimacy, you know, but Good Charlotte had their punk outfits. They had like punk outfits with patches, and they even probably never heard of the Clash. Oh, yeah, there's actually somebody said, hey, man, fuck, I love your Clash shirt. And he goes, what? He goes, the shirt, we're in a Clash shirt. And he goes, oh, shit, I just liked it. My stylist pulled it out for me. You know what I mean? It's like,
yo, it's so funny. That's offensive to me.
Yeah. You know? Right? Yeah. Okay. Another one. I got just one more good Charlotte story.
No telling.
There was a food fight happening. The last show, there's a food fight. And one of the twins, I could never tell the two apart. One got fatter. That's what I did know. And so some mustard got thrown around, and it ended up, I guess it was the guitar. No, it was the singer's pants.
Yeah.
And it looked like he was going to cry. Like, what are you doing? No. You got mustard on my pants. I'm like, really? There's mustard on your pants and you're going to cry? We're playing the smallest club in Florida right now. What are you crying about? Like, oh, it's hilarious. Yeah, whatever.
That's funny. I remember May toured with Simple Plan.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was one of those bands just like...
I hate that band.
I'm just like, what? It's like, what's going on here? It's just like, I remember one thing. They had like one of the guys... had like a tooth in it. I don't know. Like there's this moment where, I mean, I guess this is an expression of the tension where I don't not like these guys in Simple Plan. They're nice, whatever.
Sure.
You know, but at the same time, it's just like, you know, you understand what's going on. It's like, I don't feel comfortable here.
Yeah.
You know, like this is something that's wrong. And I just hate being a judgmental person or being like, you know, the police here.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, well, blah, blah, blah. And yeah. Like, this is not this or this is not that. But at the same time, it's like, this is a little weird. And, you know, I think people were right to get suspect in the 90s. You know, after the explosion, this kind of like, you know, the Green Day thing happened. And then a lot of these bands kind of came and they got popular, right? And so now you have this kind of question, this ethical question. Mm. I'm just like, okay, well, what's the Berkeley, the East Bay situation with your Jawbreakers? It's like, okay, well, you know, now we have this ethical issue where they signed to a major. And so now everything's suspect. And I don't know, you know, I love the conversations. I love to get critical. I love it. But at the same time, it's like, you know what? It's just music and there's just kids. And if a Simple Plan record is going to get someone into Green Day, which will get someone into Rancid, which will get someone into Jawbreaker, which will get someone into
Filth
or whatever,
yeah,
you know,
it's like
great, you know,
yeah.
But, you know, and that's, you know, so you can only kind of give people the bait, and if they take it, they'll take it in a good way, hopefully.
Yeah. But to zip up the whole Simple Plan will never be on my podcast ever anyways, but ambition is poisonous with those guys. That is poison. Because they were all, you know, their manager is a really old friend of mine, Paget, out of Montreal. Well, he worked with Reset, which was before Simple Plan was this band Reset.
Okay.
And he managed them and put their records out and stuff. And it's, I'm going to take that saying because ambition is poison in music. It is such a great saying, man. I love it.
No, I mean, it is, you know, it's kind of like, because everything is very appealing once you get a taste of anything. Like, you just like, okay, well, you can rationalize. And, you know, you're in Canada, and I saw that you had interviewed, I think it was the bass player or someone from the Weaker Thans.
Yeah,
John Sutton. Big fan of the Weaker Thans. Yeah. And obviously, you know, every American punk rock kid maybe is going to talk about Propagandhi.
Yeah.
And this is a weird reference, but there's like this kind of verse in the Bible where it says Christ is a stumbling block to the Jews and the Gentiles. Mm-hmm. And the idea here is that like whatever you think you know, like you don't know. Mm-hmm. And for me, like Propagandhi and Fugazi are these bands that represent these stumbling blocks to ethics.
Yeah.
Right. So as much as you want to rationalize your approach to kind of this world of music and opportunity and success. I mean, you have these bands, and I don't know you're putting on Propagandhi or Fugazi, but for me, those bands represent something that's really kind of important, not correct, but just really important.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just really thank whatever figure you want to thank for bands like that, because they maintain something as maybe you know, you can criticize, you can talk about it. You know, it's not a statement on the industry. It's not a statement on ambition. It's just like, okay, these bands did something that, and they, you know, and Propagandhi to this day for me and my world, like, still represents something that's really important. Yeah. And it's like a criticism. It's just like this kind of like critical stance towards things. And I think it's really important. And, you know, I'm in this band that's been on a major label. I mean, you know, so it's not about me being this, holding myself to a certain ethical bar. It's just about the idea that it is possible to be this type of band.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely. And I had Chris on the show, I think a year and a half ago, and we just talked about being dads mostly, but
yeah,
he just gets criticized so many times because he says things and people like, oh yeah, what about blah, 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 you know, and he'll be like, well, it's just my opinion. I have an opinion. Can I have an opinion? You know?
Yeah.
And so when he does podcasts and shows, I think he tries to keep it. He keeps his message in the music and and his ethics in the music, because they put out their own records. They pay for everything themselves, you know, like they have, you know, and that's, it seems, and when I take that back a little bit, I mean, that's a good way to go, and that's their road, that's their avenue, and that's what makes them. Could you imagine Propagandhi on a major record label? It would be a train wreck. When they were on Fat Records, that was bad enough, you know. Like,
well, it's funny because, like, obviously they had this kind of like, what do you call it? This kind of back and forth of Mike, you know, and I don't know what to make of that. You know, obviously they play into it. They're a part of a system, right? Yeah. And, you know, they're on iTunes or whatever. Sure. And these are points, if you want to be a jerk, you know, or if you want to be reductive, these are points of critique, right? But a friend of mine, there's no such thing as ethical consumption and global capitalism. Like, you can't really, you can't exist outside of this framework. And I don't know, you know, like, they're in this world and they do what they can in this world, yeah. You know, and like you said, they own their, you know, they're in control. Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I just like someone that kind of represents a question, you know. It's not to say, like you said, like, they have their opinions, right. And they just live their lives the way they want to live their lives. And they say what they want to say. But when it comes to kind of like, you know, people try to hold them to this kind of like, what the logical conclusions of what they're saying. It's like, well, you know, kind of shut up. Like, they're doing what they can.
A lot of people, they try to call them out on things like, oh yeah, well, you're in a vehicle that burns gas.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. What are you going to do about that with your gas burning vehicle? And you're flying planes in the air. Humans don't do that. You know, I hear, like, you know, they have so many people in their corner, but they also, I think they have an equal amount of people on the outside just chipping away. And I don't know how that would make me feel, you know what I mean? How would I feel about someone, you're trying to make a difference, you know, and and if you're young and dumb, you say, everybody stop eating meat and do this and live this way. But then I think they got to a point where they're like, let's just be a good band. You know what I mean? Like, our message can only be as strong as our band.
Well, you know, it's one of these things where, you know, I have these conversations with my friends, right? I kind of like my politics, like, I kind of oscillate between leftist and liberal, which is to say, I oscillate between revolution and reform. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know how to kind of locate myself on a spectrum, because, you know, you can't demonize people just because life is tough enough. Like, life is shitty, and it costs money to be ethical. You know, like, it's just like, oh, well, you don't buy organic. Well, no, I don't, because of it. Like, you know, this is not me saying this is how it is. This is me saying, like, these are the conversations people have.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, man, this is tough. You know, like, what do you do? And we're all just trying to do our best.
Yeah.
And I think Propagandhi in that world, it's just been like this exemplary kind of band where they're just, they've stuck to it, and they're smart. They're not anti-flag, and that's just obviously, it's not an anti-flag, but I don't know, like, I've learned so much. I wrote a paper in my grad school about Propagandhi. You just learn so much from listening to this band, but you also just, they shred, they rip, you know, they're so good. And I just, I'm so stoked with the new record. Like,
yeah, me
I
too.
It's so good.
That's the strongest record they've done. I mean, I like the one before too, the Failed States, but
Failed States. Well, even supporting, I mean, I've been a fan ever since they're on a Fat when they did, yeah. You know, I remember
How to Clean Everything. Let's Talk More Rock.
Everything. And, Empire's Ashes, all those records are just like, they've just gotten better. The only record I've never really gotten comfortable with is Potemkin City Limits. But that's a weird record for me still to this day.
Yeah, I had my falling off period too. I mean, I fell off kind of after Let's Talk More Rock, actually. I think one more record and went, yeah, it's good. And then I sort of fell out. But when Failed States came out, I was like, holy my God. Like, because I knew they were a good band.
Yeah.
And there's an interesting story. And I tried to get out of Chris, but what I heard was that they were playing to all these big places and weren't playing very well. They didn't really care. They were trying to show this image like, we don't care. And then finally they realized, holy crap, this is a job. I want to keep this job. So they actually started getting together like in like 5 days a week, 8 hours a day, practicing, writing songs, running their business. And they got so good, like because of it, because they're like, holy, we better take this seriously. Like everybody else does, you know? And that's them in a nutshell. They're kind of nonchalant and mellow. But at the same time, they're really serious about what they do. And yeah.
Yeah, it's so funny. I try to imagine myself like, what do they like to hang out with? Because
they're not that fun. They're not that fun. I'm sorry, Chris. I love you, but you're not fun to hang out with.
You know, I wanted to know, like because you know I've been following them like a lot recently because they got like Sue Lynn from Tampa and I'm from Florida. So I'm like, man, I'm so stoked they got a guitarist from Florida.
Yeah,
and I listen to their music. I'm just like, man, this is so meticulous and it's so good. I mean, when they got I don't know his real name, but his nickname was Beaver when they got him after Potemkin City Limits. I think Supporting Cast was his first record.
Yep.
It's like, man, this is so good. And you know that so to your story, I mean, it seems like it would be an accurate story just because, you know, like Let's Talk More Rock and even Empires, they were good, but they weren't good like the recent stuff is, like in terms of execution, in terms of parts.
Yeah,
there's a thought there and there's like this kind of like intensity there that has really kind of developed, and it's just explosive.
Absolutely. Yeah Well, so is there going to be any, so let's go back to the band. Fuck, we digress like crazy here.
No, I'm sorry. I know.
I love it. I love this. You know why? This is why I do the show. I like the show because this is why I like my shows, because I like having conversations with people. This is the best part of it. I mean, I understand you have a record out. You know, that's what I do know. And I'm gonna push that. I love it. But I do know that people are people and the music is the music, but the people behind the music makes that band, to me, more legitimate. You know,
I love talking music with people, so I'm glad we're having the conversation. I just want to do the service of John's like, oh, you guys want to do a podcast? Like, yeah, I'll do a podcast. Let's do it, you know?
Let's
promote the record.
Yeah, so it's coming out, what, December 1st?
December 1st. It's like 9 songs, and it's on Spartan. And it's funny, it's a bummer because we can't really make plans to tour. You know, we want to play as many shows as we can, but you know, it's this thing where it starts with an idea and then it kind of goes beyond that. And now that we're still kind of constrained, but we're really pumped on the record. It's definitely, we have one EP before this. And so we're calling this a debut in the sense that it is a debut of a full length record. So we're really pumped on it. And we want to get out and play some shows for sure.
Yeah. Europe would be all over this, I think. I took 3 people across in 2012 to Europe to play like, I think, 9 shows, and they had never been to Europe. And I've been there like 5 or 6 times. And it was interesting watching their perspective or their look and their views and their eyes and like, hey, we're touring in Europe. This is something, it feels like you're experiencing it for the first time. Cause I was touring in Europe in the 2003, 4, 5, and then 10 and 12 or whatever, maybe. Yeah. So going across like 5 or 6 times, and it was like, yeah, that's what you have to do now, especially with, you know, I was 27 or I was old when we put our first record out, old enough, you know, older than I should have been. Cause Canada, you know, we're living this weird image based, business that, you know, and I think now we're turning a corner with when it comes to music TV. I think image isn't as important. We're catching up to the Europeans because the Europeans, like, my oldest joke is that look at the band like the Scorpions. They are major stars in Germany, and they are ugly as sin, you know. So, but they managed to make something out of a career in Germany. They still play. They're probably playing right now. So that gives hope to the old, you know, middle-aged men like myself that you can go over, play some music. They like your band.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. I think it's possible for us to get over to Europe, you know, because, you know, Spartan has Barren Womb. They're they're Northern European. I just like, I would love it. You know, it's one of these things where our live shows are this, you know, we only played in the Northeast and the States, and everything is really exciting. Everything is really, it's like on 11, yeah. You know, when we play, and I, it's this great experience, and if we could bring that anywhere else, it'd be super killer. Mm-hmm. It's just like, I don't know what to make of how to target what we want to do in the future with this band. Mm-hmm. Just because, like, I want people to be on board. You know, obviously, Fraser over at Spartans, like, he's cool enough to put it out, and the guys are giving their time. It's like, how do you frame goals, you know, realistically? Yeah, and kind of like, we don't have an agent, but we have someone helping us trying to like book shows. And it's like, oh, well, I submitted you for these 3 days in Kansas and Tennessee and Georgia. And it's during the week. I'm just like, man, I really appreciate the work. I appreciate you submitting, but we can't do that. You know, yeah. It's just a bummer. But I don't know. It's like you want to kind of just keep control on something and,
yeah,
you know, and maintain a momentum. But who knows? You know,
I mean, kind of like, if I can, maybe I'm projecting, but I feel that there's sort of a tendency to pull back on doing what's the old guard. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. This is what you do. You get in the band, yeah. You go on tour, you put records out, you sell it across the merch table, and then you get people who like you, and then you work that way, and then you know it's a hard go. You know that you're going to play. If you wanted to, say, 20 years ago, you're in this band now, you would have to go out and play 200 shows a year.
Yeah.
At best. And then tour everywhere, be $20,000 in debt, and maybe some success will come out of it. We're not promising anything, you know?
And that's the thing. Oh, man, it's the nail in the head. It's just like, okay, well, we could play some shows, but we're just going to get bummed on each other because shows are going to suck. Yeah. You know, we're really going to sap each other's spirit, you know? So, so why? And I think it's funny because I've talked to bands around the area in Norfolk or where I'm from. You see the shift in approach. All of a sudden the approach now is we just want to kind of get sync licenses. We just want to kind of get our songs on movies or blah, blah, blah. It was just like, you know, that doesn't pay much, first of all, unless you're like huge.
Sure.
But also, like, touring is not on the map anymore. And for me growing up, like, touring was what you did. And like, you paid personal cash to go on tour. You know, you went into debt to play shows elsewhere. And I feel like that's not a thing people have. I might be speaking, I don't know. I just don't feel like that's kind of an approach American bands take
anymore.
Nobody
doesn't, because you can go play weekend shows and you go play a couple weekends and then come home and you go play another couple weekends somewhere else. Nashville is the place. Even, you know, Nashville is literally the middle of America. You know,
and social media too, kind of like, it represents something and it means something for sure.
But it can be faked. You can completely fake the whole thing.
Right. And so I just think, and that sounds, you know, I hate sounding purist. It's just like, look, I'm like, you have to go on the road. You have to go tour. And for me, I've done that, you know. But even before May, like, I was in another band. And you just go on the road. You just eat shit for a long time. You know, you just suck it up. And it's brilliant and it's magical. And the idea, obviously, is to kind of, you know,
put the work in and hope it pays off.
More popular. Yeah. And a lot of times it doesn't pay off. You know, sometimes it does. But, you know, I've been fortunate. But I think it's really important. And I think that kind of experience is not as cherished or not sought after anymore because you have this quote unquote capability to put your songs on the internet or blah, 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 or whatever. And yeah, you know, maybe you get some kind of pickup or, and, you know, make some money, but I don't know, man.
Everything goes in a circle too. You know, if you think about just musical trends, but you think about what ethical trends of how bands work, people are going to find out a new way. It's going to be something weird. And you're like, what? Why are you trying that for? You know, like there is pretty tried and true system about playing in front of people. They like your band and they happen to know some other people, you know, and it, to us, with my band, I had a band, we toured Europe a few times. It's just tough getting back there. And that was where, that was where everybody liked our band, you know? So if you don't go back for 8 months, they're like, who are you guys? You know, they don't care.
Yeah, like back in the day, like going over to, you know, like, we booked our own tours.
Yeah.
I'm just like, they're the really awful shows you play. They're really like shows you didn't play because you thought you were going to play. And then going to Europe, it's just like, you know, my old band never went to Europe.
Yeah.
And made it a few times. But even like, you know, it's like, it's a whole different world over there. Like, I think when you're locally insulated and you have your friends that come out and it's really good, but then you go, you know, 100 miles south, you have no one.
Yeah.
Like no one cares. Like people don't care. You know, how do you make someone care about your band when there's so many bands out there?
You travel 6,000 miles. That's what happens. You fly in a plane. You come to a place where people speak funny, and you go, "Hi, we're a band that speaks funny to you." And they go, "Wow, look at all the distance they've driven to come and play, and they speak funny."
Yeah.
And you know, and and that's it. It's because I know I think that, and paired with the fact that they've had an extra 1,000 years of actual spoken word and literature and art and culture, you know, where we were like, you know, literally we're 400 years old over here, right? Maybe 400. They're thousands of years old. They had the written, they had Latin, you know, you know, here we are a bunch of weird, we're descendants of weird other people's cultures. And it's tough to get your identity, and Europe has that, you know what I mean? Like definitely has something, you know? And, well, you know, I don't want to keep you too long. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah, me too. I'm glad we actually just kind of chatted. We kind of fell into it pretty easily.
Yeah,
it's
man.
It's got good conversation.
And no talking about the orange face monster.
No, thank goodness.
I know, right? I don't want to talk about him anymore.
No.
Seems like a lot of people from America want to. And
well,
I know you're afraid. I don't want to. That's what we should end it there. We're on such a good vibe there.
Yeah, I don't know how to make sense of that. So let's just kind of keep on music. Something we love and something we can really dissect.
Absolutely.
In a way that we feel comfortable.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Maybe I'll figure out a
conversation. I thank you for, you know, showing the interest enough to kind of have this conversation.
Anytime, man. I'm going to play more songs after and before. So, and let you know when it comes out and everything.
Yeah, please do. And we'll post on our socials and do everything we can.
Appreciate
to kind of get your name out there. So thank you so much.
Cool. Nice to meet you, man.
Likewise. Have a good night, okay?
What a cool dude, right? Zach Gehring of the band Demons and also of the band May. Very fun to talk to. I fell upon this because there's a guy named Mike who sometimes sends press stuff, and a lot of it's American. Actually, and a lot of the stuff he sends crosses over with the stuff Melanie Kay sends. And this is one of the ones that Melanie didn't. Because every time, you know, I figured I'd give the Canadian publicist the help. But Mike has sent me a couple of bands, Betraying the Martyrs, and he sent me this band, Demons. And thank you, Mike, for sending me such great bands. And I forget how awesome America is for aggressive music, especially punk rock and the ethics. And we sometimes get hidden by the fact that what the politics are actually in America right now. And the only light and silver lining of all of this is it can only make aggressive music stronger and better because people are getting pissed off at what's happening right now in American politics. And this is, there you go. And we actually didn't even talk about that. We actually commented we didn't talk about him, and we're not going to. So anyways, thank you so much for listening to the show. Thank you, Zach, for doing the show. You're a good man, you're a good soul, and you're a good dude. So what's happening next week? I don't know. I had a few episodes fall through. Some actual interviews fall through. So I'm going to try to get Mr. Gordon Kyle Gordon Stanley back to do an episode, and then we'll get back on track. I have a few people lined up, and I'm always interested in talking to people. So if you're interested in talking to, then get back to me. Go to applelog.ca/contact and get in touch with me. If you have an idea for who you want to be on the show, and you want to let me know who wants to be on the show, please go there and give me the scoop, and I will talk to them. I'll talk to anybody. Okay, everybody, have a great week. Have a good day. Have a good life. We'll talk to you later. Bye.